views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Big Brothers Big Sisters is a mentoring organization. It is the oldest, largest youth mentoring organization in the United States. The Big Brothers Big Sisters of Greater Tallahassee has been around since 1971. The agency has positively impacted thousands of youth and their families. Big Brothers Big Sisters fosters positive growth and relationship development, educational success, and the avoidance of negative behaviors such as drugs and or violence. Joining me, I welcome the CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters, Alva Striplin.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to 411 Team. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. What's the mission of Big Brothers Big Sisters?
You know, the mission is to help every child achieve the success that we know they can achieve in life. We have some children out there that just need a little extra support, and we know by placing that one mentor in their life that it's going to make that difference. It's going to get them to where they need to be in life.
That's a big mission.
It is a big mission.
Sounds like I'm going to correct the world.
Oh, I wish we could. And I think our mentors want to, but they do it one child at a time, one mentor in the life of one child. And instead of changing the entire world, they're changing the life of that one child. And the ripple effects, I think, are enormous.
Yeah. Well, you have a positive impression here in the community. Who is served when we're talking about kids? Who are we talking about? What age range?
So our agency, we served about 500 youth in the greater Tallahassee, Big Bend area last year alone, so calendar year. Mm-hmm. Most of our youth are between the ages of 6 and 12, but we do go all the way up through 17. They actually term out of our program when they become an adult at 18 years old. But the major bulk of our children are that elementary school age. They are children who predominantly come from single-parent homes. They possess the risk factors. I think we all know that could
Share
cause them to
up.
Make some. Okay. So single parent home, poverty. We have most of our families live below the poverty line, at or below. They have a whole entire group, specific population that has an incarcerated parent. And we receive funding from the state, from the Department of Juvenile Justice for that specific population. And we know that if they have that trajectory in their life, that makes them more inclined to follow that path. And we want to put a mentor in their life that shows them a different trajectory.
Now, you say Big Bend. What areas do you cover?
So we serve Leon, Gadsden, Wakulla, Liberty, Jefferson, Taylor.
Okay, so you have a lot.
A lot. We don't do as well as we would like to do in some of those outlying areas. Mm-hmm. We know the need is so great there, but we also have to have mentors from those areas. And that's sometimes very difficult to find. We are constantly on the hunt for mentors, and our search for mentors is 365 a year. We never stop looking for mentors, and we know that those rural counties, there's a great need, but we also need mentors from those counties to be able to meet that need.
How is the selection of children participants determined? I mean, what's the referral basis?
Mm-hmm. So we have two different programs. So our school-based program is where mentors actually meet on school grounds with their, we call them, you'll hear me call them bigs and littles. It kind of becomes part of our vernacular there at Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So they meet with their little on school property. We serve right now four Title I schools here in Leon County, Hartsfield, Oak Ridge, Astoria Park, and Bond Elementary. Our largest program is at Hartsfield. We serve about 80 children at Hartsfield. They're identified by the staff on those school sites. So guidance counselors, teachers, administrators, Dr. Flanagan at Hartsfield is a very, very dear woman and a treasure to our school system. She's a big supporter, and so I think she sees the children that have that need, and all we need after that is parent signature, and that's where those children come from.
So what are the variables that the staff are identifying as risk, at-risk kids.
You know,
what I want to do is paint a picture with mm-hmm. words so that those who are listening will be able to walk away from hearing this and go, oh, this, you know, mm-hmm. so if you can give me some more specifics.
So if you actually can go to our Facebook page, every Wednesday we feature a child, and it's called Waiting Wednesday.
And
so
where is that? Hey, excuse me for interrupting.
That's okay.
But for the listening audience, tell us, where is Facebook? How do they get to it?
Go to the World Wide Web, Google, Facebook, there it is,
awesome.
Or Instagram, and just search Big Brothers, Big Sisters. Okay. Now, you'll see a lot of them pop up,
mm-hmm.
but if you're located here in Leon County or surrounding, you want Big Brothers, Big Sisters of the Big Bend. Our Facebook page will pop up, and you will see children, stories about ones that are waiting. You'll also see match stories, which is sometimes our big send-in stories and say, this is me and my little, and we went to a football game, and my little had never been to a stadium before and ate cotton candy, and the pictures are just they speak 1,000 words, so you can see the stories on there. But that is specific, the school-based population. Those referrals come from the schools. Now we have a whole nother program, our community-based program, that they actually go out and meet in the community. So those are the matches that do go to the football games or out to eat.
Where do they come? How are they referred?
Their parents.
Their
parents call the office. Most often, predominantly, we see single mom, single grandma, aunt raising possibly her children, possibly, there could be a neighbor on their couch. These are children that are – the mother is struggling, just trying to put food on the table, and she just needs that additional support.
What are the referral comments that are made? What kinds of issues are the parents or the grandparents or the primary caregivers experiencing?
You know, I think they just want help. They just want that emotional support for their child. They might see a little bit of, I think we're headed down the wrong road.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more than that, it's just they want somebody to love them and be in their life like a real big brother
mm-hmm.
or a big sister would be, yeah.
And so that's what they're asking
mm-hmm.
for. Participants, what are your participants? I'm talking about the actual students themselves. What do they look like? I mean, and by that, I mean, do you have more males? We always hear that there are more males. There are more males than there are females. And so that's what I'm talking about. What do they look like?
Our waiting list is predominantly males. Now, we try to even it out. The population that we serve ends up being about 60-40,
mm-hmm.
male, female.
Okay.
But our waiting list is predominantly boys. And unfortunately, the mentors that walk through our door that are ready to give of themselves 1 hour a week, we see more females come through the door.
Mm-hmm.
So we have families that want a strong male role model in their young boy's life. It's not that they're opposed to a female, but their preference is to have a male for their male child.
Yeah.
So my staff, they do their very best to try to recruit. We go to every opportunity, fraternities, businesses where there's a high prevalence of males in their industry, corporations, a Rotary Club, you name it. We go. We take every opportunity to encourage mentoring.
Why do you see such a paucity of males involved? What's your take on that?
You know, I think as females, we're just born a little more nurturing maybe than men. But oh my gosh, the men that come through our door they're unbelievably great. They are kind, giving. They are there just to give of themselves. So I see great hope, and they often reach out to their friends and say, dude, you got to do this. This is
it's good.
Changed. They tell their friends, this has changed my life more than it has his.
Mm-hmm.
It just puts things into perspective when you're focusing on that little life. We have a great partnership with our universities here, and a lot of our mentors are here as students, mm-hmm. and they see that as a way to give back to this new community where they've become a member.
What is the process for becoming a mentor?
Mm-hmm. So step one, go online or call the office, bigbendmentoring.org. Same thing, you can Google Big Brothers, Big Sisters of the Big Bend. You sign a information, here, I'm interested to be a mentor, mm-hmm. enroll here, boom, comes to our office, and they'll contact you the next day and set up an interview. Or just give us a call, 850-386-6002. Tell them, hey, I'm interested in mentoring a child, and we get you in for an interview.
And let's deal with it a little bit more specifically, mm-hmm. like the screening part. I'm sure you have to have a screening process, if they're going to be dealing with these, children,
yeah,
basically.
Yes.
So what does that, for example, people may hear this And they may be interested and mm-hmm. say, wow, you know, I think that might be something that I would be interested in doing.
Mm.
What, besides that, I mean, what does the screening process involve?
Yeah, don't be afraid. I would say any listener, that don't be afraid. We want good people that want to help our children. When you come to our office, we sit down for an interview, an intake interview, and it takes about a half an hour.
Okay.
My staff is, they're picky. They want to know all about
you.
What's your life? Yeah, we serve children.
Right.
But in addition to the personal interview, they do have to go through a level 2 background check. So we actually have 2 different companies we work with. So we actually put some of our mentors through twice, depending on which program they're in.
And what kind of things are you looking for in their background?
You know, they are looking for any red flags, obviously any arrests, anything they've been in trouble with the law, obviously any child issues that would raise a red flag, it's out. But they're really just looking to see if there's any criminal background. And that's state, that's countrywide, not just while you're in Tallahassee, but
right,
is there anything in your
cool.
past that would lead to kind of an issue moving forward. I will say we did have, my staff was telling me, I love when we sit around and share stories about what's going on with the kids and the mentors. And we had a mentor come to us, and he wanted to mentor so badly, but like 8 years ago, he had a DUI. And we discussed it at great length, and we decided everything else about him was great. He had this one blip in his life where I think we've all made mistakes at one point in time, but we didn't see it as a reason to keep him from becoming a mentor. And now he's been matched almost 2 years, and he's changing a life. So we look at him in a one-on-one case basis.
I'm glad you shared that, because that's what I wanted to know. For those who are listening, they might think, oh, well, you know, I passed a bad check a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote a check, it bounced, I didn't take care of it, anything. So I just wanted, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, that's not what we're looking for. You know, we're looking for the stuff that you and I would, everyone would look at and go, yeah, no, that's not.
What about age? And I see we need to almost take a break, but think about this and we'll come back, because I want to know if there are other restrictions that are involved or other limitations that are involved in becoming a mentor at Big Brothers Big Sisters. You tuned in to 411 Teen, and I am talking with Alva Striplin. She is the CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters, a program that is dynamic, really makes a difference in the lives of children and families. We're going to take a break, but we'll return momentarily. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I'm talking with Alva Striplin. She is the CEO of Big Brothers Big Sisters. Big Brothers Big Sisters volunteers subscribe to a uniform set of standards and procedures. Research has indicated that major advances in the attitudes of youth who have participated in the program. Alva, I had to interrupt you. You didn't get to finish. But as far as looking at the mentors and characteristics, is there an age limit? Does that matter? I mean, you said it's definitely on an individual basis.
Mm-hmm.
But what about those who may be grandparent age?
That's okay. We have great mentors in our we actually our big brother of the year a couple of years ago, 60, I believe he's 60-something
mm-hmm.
years old,
mm-hmm.
retired and found himself at a place in his life where he had the time to do it. He had was in town and wanted to be a part of some young person's life. He'd raised his children, and he's a wonderful mentor. So our requirement is really that you're 18 years old or older, and ability to serve and the willingness to give 1 hour a week. But other than that, now, if you're a community-based match, you do have, which means you pick the child up from their house and take them somewhere, we do require that you have a vehicle and proof of insurance.
But
other than that, yeah. But the school-based, the school side's not so much.
But the minimal is 1 hour a week?
That's it, 1 hour a week.
Wow.
Okay. I know.
That's impressive. 1 hour, but it can make a big difference.
It does make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
What about the orientation and training process that goes along with, associated with becoming a mentor.
Sure. That's the one thing I have people ask me about all the time,
yes,
especially other mentoring agencies. Can you share your secrets with us? Like, it's really not a secret because the largest part of our training is ongoing support. We don't just train them at the beginning and have them watch a few videos and then wish them luck and never talk to them again other than our yearly check-in. My staff talks to them every month or every 3 months or every 6 months, depending on the length of the match. Mm-hmm. But for the first year, they contact the bigs every month, every month. So we want to know, did you meet? Where did you meet? What did you guys talk about? Was there anything that bothered you or anything we can help you with? So my amazing staff, they're almost like social workers. They want to help that relationship grow and thrive and support the mentor in whatever he needs. Sometimes we have a child that may move and the mentor didn't know they withdrew from school. Well, we have contact with the family so we can then find, where is the child? Did they stay in Leon County? Are they just at another school? Did they? And then we reconnect them if possible. Or we share with the mentor that they've moved. So we have some transient situations in which it's hard to track down, but we're there to help them every step of the way.
Okay, so you're an ongoing resource. Mm-hmm. Now, are there any courses, any workshops, anything like that
yes.
that they have to attend, to participate and become a mentor?
Yes. So they do have to come to the office for the interview, obviously, and for the initial match meeting in which some groundwork is laid out for them. Other than beyond that, there are courses through Big Brothers Big Sisters of America. So our national agency requires they take one course, but they actually are offered about 20 different courses online. So they have the option.
So these are online.
Yes, they're online. So you don't come to our office for any further training other than that initial kind of setup.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's that consistent report. Supporting and support and follow up along the way of the match.
Now, you said something about the length of a match.
Mm-hmm.
Is it time limited? I mean, is it what, you do it for 3 months and then you quit, or how does that work?
No, we would love for every match to go on till that child turns 18. That's our goal. We want long, strong matches. The requirement, the minimum, we ask 1 year commitment. We don't want someone who comes in and wants 6 hours worth of community service and then bails out after a few weeks.
Oh, yeah.
That's not for us. There's plenty of other agencies to help with that if you're looking for community service hours. We're looking for somebody who really wants to change a life. So we asked for a year commitment. But we want, 1 year. And for school-based matches, obviously, that's a school year. So when you throw out a few weeks because of holidays and a few weeks because of testing, there's a few – you're going to miss a few weeks in there. But we ask that. We ask that 1 hour a week for an entire school year with that match. Now, what we hope is at the end of that year, they say – oh, yes, we want to continue with this same child. We want to see those matches grow and stay together because we know, just like any of us with our personal relationships, the longer we get to know somebody, the more we share about ourselves and the deeper that relationship becomes.
I would think that that's really important. Mm-hmm. And I think it also fosters, some security with the child. If you have someone who comes in and they're there for 6 weeks and they leave, I mean, what message does that send?
Well, and then we find a lot of our littles have that all too familiar story in their background. Dad popped in and out or boyfriend popped in and out. We really want someone to commit to them, like I said, for at least a year. And we do have some that have gone on 8, 10, 9, 10 years that they've been
really?
Together. Yep, absolutely. We had one here recently. I ran into them out at dinner one night, actually, and they pulled up a picture on their phone, and the big had just gotten married, and the little was in his wedding. Not just attended, he was in his wedding as a groomsman. There he was, the lineup of this sweet, sweet man who was getting married, and his little was in the wedding. So it was, that's what we want.
And they often, I guess, may maintain contact even after they have aged out of the program?
Some of them do. And it's so funny. There are so many members of our community that were bigs in the past. And when I talk to these people, they share with me, I was a big brother when I was in my 20s for about 3 years. And out of the blue, 5 years ago, I got a call from my little who shared with me his story and how much I meant to him at that point in his life. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could share the name. It's crazy the people in our community that were involved in the Big Brothers program, Big Sisters back, 20, 30 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
As far as the strength of the program, as you talk about the program, unfortunately nobody can see you, but obviously you're very excited and very enthused with the program. What would you identify as a strength, a real strength of the program, and why has it continued? In your opinion.
I think anytime you have something that's gone on, we've been in America for 113 years, 114 years. So originally, I'll tell you a funny story. This Big Brothers Big Sisters was originally founded as two separate entities. So it was a judge in a courtroom that saw too many young males coming through his court without a male role model. And so he started getting his friends, hey, come talk to this child. I want you, instead of sending him to jail, I want him to have a mentor. And that's where it started. Meanwhile, nearby, a local nun was seeing the same thing with young girls. And she saw women going astray because they did not have a female role model in their life. A few years go by, they combine their efforts, and it becomes Big Brothers, Big Sisters of America. And so here we are. So I think it's years of learning, of seeing what succeeds, possibly what doesn't, and branching out. And we have a very strong name brand. But again, I go back to that. I think it's that consistent match support. It's the support of the relationship from our staff all along the way.
We're talking about Big Brothers, Big Sisters. From our listening audience, tell them again how they can contact you by phone, net, whatever.
Yes, definitely reach out to us. Say you want to be a mentor, change the life of a child. Go to bigbenmentoring.org or call us 850-386-6002.
Well, sounds good. How did you become involved?
Fate, absolutely, without a doubt it was fate. So I was a classroom teacher here in Tallahassee. I was a stay-at-home mom and a volunteer and just found my passion being youth. I knew there was no better cause to get behind than the youth in our community or youth anywhere. So I ran for election and was elected to the school board in 2014. And when I was elected, you can't teach anymore. So it's a conflict of interest. So I knew that I would have to find another job, but I knew that it would be with children. I knew that that was what I was looking for. And so I met Luis Garcia, who was my predecessor at the time, a large personality.
Yes. Know him well. He's been on program several times.
And you talk about on fire for Big Brothers, Big Sisters. Mm-hmm. He is an enormous advocate, actually left this agency to go to the one in Seattle. So he's a lifer, Big Brother, Brothers, Big Sisters. So he offered me a job. And about 3 months after that, he was offered the job in Seattle, and I ended up taking over the agency. I think he found in me that same passion just for youth and children and the issues that we face and what we want to do to correct that.
What do you see as the major challenges for youth today? I mean, given that you're working with them on an ongoing basis, you have a love for them, you're on the school board, so I mean, you got youth and you have children of your own. I mean, but so often individuals will say, oh, it's not that bad. It's not like it was when we were children. Of course, I totally see it the opposite, but I often love to get the insight of those who are working with children on a regular basis.
How long is your program? Because we could talk about this for for hours. But, if I had to pinpoint, and it's a common thread between what I see in the school district and what I see in Big Brothers, Big Sisters, is the mental wellness and emotional happiness, just general happiness of our children. And notice I don't say mental illness. I'm not talking about, they need meds or there's something really psychological. I'm just talking emotional well-being, just feeling accepted and loved, whether it be by their peers, by their family, by their, the mentor that might be in their life, whether it be a mentor in our program or just maybe somebody they look up to. I think everybody is out searching for that emotional support and for somebody to tell them, man, you're doing a good job. You're going to be A-OK. And I think that's what our mentors do. And I think it makes a big difference in a youth's life, whether that youth be 10 years old or 16 years old. And I mm-hmm. think we see that across all walks of life, all areas of town. Mental wellness is something that transcends zip codes. We've got to address that in every area of our society.
Although that may be the case, but it seems like there's a focus, and where you really focus your time are schools that are in, I would say, neighborhoods or communities mm-hmm. that are in poverty. I mean, because you talk about Bond, you talk about Hartsville. Where else mm-hmm. did you say?
Oak Ridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Astoria Park.
And so that is a certain segment of society.
It is. So when we talk about the at-risk, the elements mm-hmm. that put our youth at risk, those mm-hmm. are definitely indicative to some of those schools. It's not just those mm-hmm. schools. We wish we could serve everywhere.
Right.
But on the other aspect of the spectrum, I've actually been looking into suicide prevention programs. I'm finding a lot of peer-led initiatives. We're actually going to pilot one at Mumford this coming year, which we didn't talk about this earlier, but it is a peer-led support system for suicide and any other just emotional well-being issues that are going on, but it's peer-to-peer. So they reach out and they want 20% of your school population to be involved in this program.
Okay. Are you going to identify that? I mean,
Lewis Blessing, thank goodness. Unfortunately, they had a suicide at Mumford not long ago. And I think when he heard about this program, he was as excited as I was. What can we do to help? Mm-hmm. What can we do to help? I think we all want to help, but this is a new and different kind of way of going about it. It's not about training the teachers to identify it. It's about training the students to identify it and then sharing that with their adult leaders and encouraging those kids to come talk about the problems before it escalates, whether it be we see so many tragedies in our schools across the country. So we see mental wellness needs on both ends of the spectrum. It just so happens that my agency is most of the kids that are referred to us come from the more poverty areas, the Title I schools, and that's the need that we're serving. But the need is not relegated just to them. It's everywhere.
Right. As we look at just the changes in family structure, do you feel that the deterioration of the family has played a role in creating high risk? Or are we just more sophisticated?
Oh, it's tough because we do know that the statistics show that a single parent household, often the kids struggle a little bit more mm-hmm. than a relationship where they see a supportive two parent household. The level of income obviously is less, so there's more taxation on the parent to bring in those resources to put food on the table. So, I do think, but I think there's greater factors than that. I think our children are seeing so much on social media. They're seeing.
Must have read my mind because I just think, what about
and
social
we sound so
media?
Old. I don't want to sound old. But they see what we post, and you and I are probably no different. What we post on social media is ourself happy and, wherever it is, we're on vacation and everybody looks like they're having a glorious
great time.
Yeah. We don't show that everybody was squabbling last night over, we didn't want to watch the same thing, so we all put it into separate areas or whatever it is, or home on a Friday night by themselves. Nobody posts that. But that's what the majority of people are doing. But it just puts so much pressure on our kids mm-hmm. to feel like if they're not living up to that perfect standard that they see on Snapchat or on Instagram or wherever it may be that they're looking, that they're not good enough and that could not be farther from the truth.
Well, social media does not really reinforce interpersonal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I just heard they were doing a study about this, how you really, the interpersonal relationship has deteriorated to some mm-hmm. degree. Because you can communicate back and forth, but not really,
right.
okay?
Right.
It's a very superficial kind of communication,
yep.
which reminds me, I don't know, I can't remember some restaurant now, but there were two young folks. Obviously, I guess they were out on a date or whatever, but they didn't interact at all.
They were
all.
On their phones.
One was on the phone, and the other was on the, and every once in a while they'd look up, and then they go back to the phone, and I kind of, just out of peripheral vision, kind of picked that up. Which makes me wonder, you know, we don't know how to connect.
Yeah.
And have you found that? Do you see that in the kids that you are, you know, working with or that your mentors are working with, that they don't know how to connect? In addition to this big focus on materialistic things.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that's so wonderful about Big Brothers Big Sisters is you are required 1 hour, that is FaceTime with that child. That is not, that does not mean texting that child. Mm-hmm. That does not mean sending them pictures. Right. That is actually what you and I are doing right here, mm-hmm. sitting down at a table one-on-one with that child. I think we're missing that. A lot of people are missing that in their lives. That's where your real friend is. Your Facebook friend, you know, is not always a friend that would sit down and have a conversation with you, but your big brother or your big sister is.
But that's the direction that society is going in. So any insights as to how, you know, parents, teachers, administrators, I mean, you sit in all those seats, may have some change.
You know, just to keep promoting those personal relationships. Like I said, get engaged with your school community, your, you know, this peer leadership group we're talking about for suicide prevention. Find someone to reach mm-hmm. out to in your network or a new network. Oh my gosh, I saw the greatest, the Friend Bench. Did you see this the other day? I saw mm-hmm. a little clip, and it was a company that's making a bench, and it's it has a little aura around it. And if you sit on the bench as a child at a school or in a park, that means that you are open to want to make a friend. They also heard they're doing this at lunchroom tables, that they have designated tables for I want to make a friend. In fact, it was an app a girl invented. Come sit with me or mm-hmm. find a friend. I can't remember what it was now. But it was putting yourself out there. And that's hard for our children. Yeah. Put yourself out there because trust me, there's someone else out there who wants to come be your friend.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. This hour I'm talking with Big Brothers Big Sisters CEO, and we're going to take a break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Did you know that Big Brothers Big Sisters is the oldest, largest, most effective one-to-one mentoring program in the United States? It serves children ages 6 through 18. We were talking about, and I didn't know if you finished the peer program. When is that starting?
Oh, I'm so excited about this. It's, yes. You guys will have to, if you're listening, just look into it a little bit. It's called Sources of Strength.
Okay.
I even love just the name of it. Mm-hmm. Source, what's your source of strength? Is it your exercise every day? Is it your daily devotional? Are you, you know, do you find strength in the Lord? Do you find strength in, you know, painting every day or a certain song that you listen to? And it's about weaving those people together and showing each other, oh my gosh, there is a strength. There is a source of strength in my life. And that's what mm-hmm. I need to focus on. So this program is being piloted at schools and in different levels all over the country. And it was piloted at Titusville High School a few years ago, and they found such success that the entire county, I believe it's Brevard County, is implementing it in every middle and high school. Every middle.
Really?
Yes. And like I said, we have great suicide prevention programs in place, but the difference I see in this one is that it's peer-led. It's not about training the teachers. It's mm-hmm. not about recognizing the signs.
The
I think
signs
we all,
all
yeah,
about
yeah, yeah, exactly. more training and conferences mm-hmm. and classes. It's about getting the kids engaged with their peers.
How are they doing this? I mean, are they identifying key kids, or is there just a general program or a class or a lecture or whatever that everybody is exposed to? What's the process?
I don't know all of the details specifically, but mm-hmm. I have been very involved with the principal at Mumford, our district staff, as well as the Sources of Strength resources or founders. So they train, you identify two or three leaders at your school. They are trained, but then it's almost like, so you know how student government, then in court, okay.
Right.
So you have a student government leader who then engages every representative from every class. It will be like that. So that adult leader at Mumford will then engage a certain member of population throughout the school. And I think the goal for Sources of Strength is to have an athlete, a music person, a drama person, an art person, a gothic person, a person who feels they don't fit in anywhere. We want every single walk of life, but they come together each, I don't know if it's monthly, but they get together and spin out these programs where within their school community, they're raising awareness to suicide prevention and just mental health in general. So whether it be a sticky wall that says, what's your source of strength one day? And every student puts a sticky on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So Sources guides them through some of the ideas that they have, but then they also have the flexibility to come up with their own. So I think, you know, I think it's a step in the right direction. We've got to try something. And I found it's research-based. It's been going on for a long time. It has proven positive results, and I think it's a good investment for our community.
As we look at mentors, there are a couple other variables that I wanted to ask how they were handled or if it really made a difference. You touched on one, and one is religion. I mean, how is that handled? I mean, do you try to match religions? I mean, what do you do? How do you because that can be a real kind of situation.
Yes, and so we have what's called intentional matching. And the reason for that is we want the match to have something in common. We want mom or dad or whoever it may be that brings the child to us, we want them to have the person in their life that they envision having. So if mom comes to us and says, I want a Christian, we want a mentor who's a Christian. If mom comes to us and says, I want a person who is in the food service industry because my child wants to go into that, whatever it may be, we want to find that common ground. My son wants a basketball player. But religion is a question that we ask our families and our mentors. Not because we promote one or the other. Mm-hmm. We just want the match to have that in common.
We don't
want to cause any strife or you know, disagreement. We want mom and child to be – they are our priority. We want mom and child to be happy.
How do you deal with culture and ethnicity?
Same thing. We ask if mom says, I want an African-American male and I will not consider anybody else, then that's what we try to find. That's the longest wait. That's the problem.
And so to say, well, you're probably still looking.
Listen, when we see a young African-American come through the door, we're like, let's go. We'll get you matched tomorrow. You know, we're ready because the need is just really great in that community. Now, there are times where mom may say she wants that and then a couple of months go by and we say we have an unbelievably great African-American female, would you be interested in that? She may say yes. She may say no. And then we keep looking. We keep looking.
Okay. Well, as long as it works.
Mm-hmm. You know. And age, same way. It's not just race or ethnicity. It's also age. We want to know, are you okay with a 60-year-old instead of a 20-year-old? She may not be or she may be. I mean, it just depends
on where they're at. Okay. Somewhat addresses the next issue I have, and that was the family involvement. I mean, is there family involved? Obviously, you're talking with the parents to see, you know, what are the parameters, what are the variables that you feel need to be addressed. But is there anything that you all do with families?
Yeah. So more with the community-based match than with the school-based. So we talked about the two different tracks.
Yes.
So school-based
parents
definitely have to sign off and be aware that their child has a mentor. But
this mentor comes to school.
Yes.
Okay. So just so we got it clear.
Yes.
That mentoring, school-based, that mentoring is really in the school environment.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they come to school and they may do tutoring or
shoot baskets,
hang out with them. But it's all in the school.
Right.
Okay. Now, the community-based, this is a different.
It is. I think of it as a little more intense, a little more personal involvement. Mm-hmm. So the mentor actually goes to the house, picks up the child. So there is interaction with the family. There is that, you know, consent from mom, hey, 2 o'clock on Saturday works all the time. Or, you know what, the Saturdays are not good for us. Can you do on Tuesday nights, you know, every week or once a month or whatever it may be. So there is that involvement with the parents a little bit more on the community-based side.
How many clients can a mentor have? I mean, if it's only 1 hour a week, let's say they come to you and they have 3 hours. a week that they are available and would like to volunteer services. Mm-hmm. Are there other areas of things that they can do, or can they have more than one client?
They could have more than one. I would say that does not happen very often. Oh. I think maybe I know of one since I've been there that said, I want to be a big to two different children. Okay. We just want to make sure that commitment.
One,
that one is done and done well. Mm-hmm. But we don't often have people say they want more than one. Now the community based, while it's still 4 hours a month, which for the school based is 1 hour a week, it's 4 hours a month is the minimum. So if they want to get, if you're a community based match and you want to meet more time, more often, that's completely fine. That's up to you guys. Mm-hmm. And our staff reports on that. We want to make sure mom is okay with how often they're meeting, how much they're meeting. So we're safety is the top priority with our matches, but definitely more interaction with the family than there is with school based.
Now you mentioned another group. Incarcerated parents. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Oh my gosh. I'll share a quick story with you. Okay. Our big brother of the year last year, Jason, an amazing, just all of our bigs are just amazing. Mm-hmm. Every time I see him, I just want
to
hug them.
They have to be special.
They are, because this is a child they've never met before.
Right.
Never.
Right.
So anyway, he sent in a letter one day and told us he had gotten a phone call at home, didn't recognize the number, picked it up, and, heard a guy on the back, hey, is this, and said his name. Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, it is, and he thought it was a sales call. It was his little's dad calling from prison. And when he shared with him, hey, I'm mm-hmm. child's father, I'm calling from mm-hmm. penitentiary, wherever it was he was. And he said, my first thought was, this man is going to be upset with me. He is calling to say, get out of my child's life. Yeah,
he was like, over
exactly,
his father.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the image he had of this man that he knew nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
And he said very quickly, the man said, I'm just calling to thank you for what you're doing in my child's life. You are making a difference, and I just want to thank you. I just wanted to take this chance to thank you, and I hope one day I get to meet you. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like you it's powerful. It really is. And those children, I can't imagine what they're going through.
So now do they do the same kind of things? Is the mentor same purpose? I mean, mm-hmm. with incarcerated, but they just have a particular subset.
Yes. They're just particularly children who have an incarcerated parent, but that doesn't make their mentoring any different than
mm-hmm.
it does
okay.
the non. So out of that relationship, if it bubbles up, my dad's in prison and they start to open up about that issue, my staff is there to help guide them through how to respond to that, how to very carefully share with your child, while you love your dad, he'll always be your dad, there is another path in life. And maybe your dad made choices that, that we want you not to make. And I'm sure your dad would tell you the same thing. But also sharing that information with mom, too. So there definitely can be some very deep conversations in that aspect.
What about that kid who's having some problems in school? Mom is concerned. And his father is incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you determine which program do you get that sophisticated? Which program they would go into?
We don't. We don't
okay.
get that. The school-based children are recommended by the school, and then the rest of them come to our office and say, mm-hmm. we want a big in our life. And through the interview process with the family is when it bubbles out if they have an incarcerated parent. The only difference is that we receive a separate pot of state funding for that. That's it.
Okay.
We got, I believe, and it's legislatively allocated, mm-hmm. we're through our state. So there's 11 big brothers, big sisters throughout the state.
Okay.
We serve, all the way from Pensacola all the way down to Miami.
Okay.
Obviously, a variety of needs in every community. Miami has a whole Spanish-speaking population that they serve. We don't have that here in Tallahassee. So every agency is different, but we still have that one-to-one mentoring model. That does not change.
That's the common thread
through all
mm-hmm.
of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about funding. How are you funded?
So we get about a third of our funding from the state, both Department of Juvenile Justice and Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
We get another substantial chunk from the United Way and CHSP kind of part of the process that just recently split, but United Way is a supporter of the agency. We have two very large events that we fundraise through here locally. In fact, one's coming up, Bowl for Kids' Sake, in September, and that's something that's done nationwide for Big Brothers Big Sisters. But the rest of it we raise ourselves either through individual contributions, grants. I was just writing a grant today for Volunteer Florida. They have a new grant out, so we're always on the look corporate grants, Bank of America, Capital City Bank. We have Comcast, AT&T. Mm-hmm. We have some very large corporate supporters. But we are always, the more money we make, the more kids we can serve. That is the goal. It's not, I was explaining to somebody the other day, to be a nonprofit means you don't want to make money at the end of the year. You want to serve more kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have any ongoing annual programs or annual fundraisers, I guess, that the listening audience should be aware of so they could be tuned in to, you know, kind of focus on, listen for?
You know, if you're the kind of person that likes to just give your credit card and be a monthly giver, just go online. There's a donate button. You can become a recurring giver. If you give at the $1,000 level or above, you're a special, it's called an Impact Circle giver. And we try to have a reception for those people a couple of times a year and just, you know, just to say thank you to them for their consistent and ongoing support. And there's a link, a donate button on our site. You can, I mean, $20 a month, $40 a month, $10, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Every little bit helps. If you're the kind of person who likes to go to an event and get dressed up, we have the Champagne Bash every year in the spring.
What is that?
Oh, it's just a big party.
Well, that's what we want to know.
It is a big party.
That's what we want to know.
It is. I have a wonderful, I have the best board of directors in Tallahassee, I believe. They are so active and involved. So our board of directors and their networks come together. We try to get our bigs to come and celebrate with us, corporate partners. And we just have a big, in fact, the sheriff, Sheriff McNeil was a big partner with that event this year. He's a big advocate for mentoring. I think he sees the difference that it makes in lives and in communities. And I think it's a way he sees to help bridge that gap between the crime that we're seeing in Tallahassee and possibly some of the education gap as well. So we're lucky to have the sheriff as a supporter.
Okay. Any other organizations or foundations that are actively involved that we need to know? I'm just trying to get a feel for the community connection of Big Brothers, Big Sisters that you can identify.
I think I identified the biggest corporate ones, but like I said, Sheriff is one of the larger ones. Red Wire was a sponsor this year. Publix is an ongoing sponsor, all the way down to smaller foundations. We have a big sister who's amazing, who has her own foundation, and she gives generously every year. So it is across the board. Capital City Bank, there's the Tallahassee State Bank. I mean, there's just so many of them. I wish I had the list. I would reel them out, but no one wants to hear that. But we are very grateful to the sheriff for his support this last year. It was a very strong partnership. We actually went and presented to the entire sheriff's agency this past week about becoming a mentor. Yeah. So across the country, we have programs called Bigs in Blue. And it is actually programs specific to law enforcement, trying to not only get them to be mentors with our kids, but also to provide that presence, maybe in a school setting where children are seeing law enforcement in a fun, interactive, not with their gun or car, arresting anybody, but they're seeing them in a real life setting where they just want to interact with them and be their big. So we presented to the sheriff all week long. For 2 weeks, we've been going when they check in and recruiting, hoping that they'll step up and be mentors.
Well, today, so many kids are identified as being at a crossroads as far as, which way to turn, okay? Mm-hmm. And you have had and continue to have a lot of interaction with children. Any insights in this last minute and a half that you would share, any words of wisdom that you would share with the listening audience, with the community about just children out there and what they need and what you would suggest?
You know, it's so funny. We have people come to us and they're like, well, I really don't know if I have what it takes to be a mentor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I tell them it requires one thing, just show up. to show up. Children are so, and I know every teacher, if there's any teachers out there listening, they know they come into their classroom and wrap themselves around your leg, the little guys sometimes. They just want to be loved and supported and appreciated. And I think that's what being a mentor is about. If you just show up, meet that child, trust me, things will bubble up and you'll be just fine. You will be just fine.
Well, thank you. I've been talking with Alva Stripland. She is the CEO of Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I appreciate your time, my listening audience, and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.